You are now listening to Financial Fornicating with Madam Money and Friends, the podcast where controversial cash conversations and fun financial tips are shared for healthier relationships with your money. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be big mad or laugh out loud. Either way, we're about to learn something. Let's go.
Welcome to Financial Fornicating with Madam Money and Friends. I am Tara Jackson, aka Madam Money. And my friend today, Miss Tyrese McAllister. Hey, girl. Hey.
Hey, girl. How are you?
I am amazing. It's so good to see you again. We just met, what, in November? September.
Was it November?
It was November, I think.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't know. I don't know. It was the end of, it was fourth quarter.
It was
quarter.
In the fall.
It was in the fall. It was cold. So of 2022. And we just hit it off. Like, you're just so down to earth and so cool. And we just had a ball together. And I so appreciate the universe for connecting us together and for you coming on the show to really talk about this. Mental health and money is very, very close and near and dear to my heart for several reasons that we'll talk about. But I appreciate you being in the space of mental health, mental wellness for us as a community and just in general as well. But I know how awesome and amazing you are. So you tell the world how awesome and amazing you really, really are.
Okay, so I guess when you ask a question like that, it's no time for me to be humble, right?
No.
So I am awesome and amazing. It's because I serve an awesome and amazing God who allows me to make an impact in the world. So I am a mental health therapist. So I am passionate about people and their mental health. I want people to be able to be well. And especially African-Americans, traditionally, we haven't taken care of our mental health. And so I'm sort of, I guess you could say, on a crusade to make sure that people understand mental health, mental illness, and that they know that they can take care of it and that it's treatable. And that, you know, we can live our best lives despite a diagnosis. I have a couple of books. Some of them do talk about mental health and wellness. And I also am an advocate in the community. I'm an anti-gun violence advocate, have a nonprofit foundation, Ayanna J. McAllister Legacy Foundation, where we do gun violence, anti-gun violence work in the community. And there's more, but check my website out.
Oh, and we're going to get to the website in just a few minutes, but thank you again for all that you do in the community and for what you're doing in our community for, you know, helping us with this mental health, mental wellness, crusade that we're all on, is that mental health is just as important as our physical health and our, and we need to treat it as such and make it a priority as well. So, but a lot of people are, you know, there's a stigma, especially in the African-American community, about mental illness, about mental health. Let's talk about why is there a stigma and what really is mental health? What is mental health? Because a lot of people don't really understand.
Right. Well, everybody, let's start with the last question first. Everybody has mental health and we should all be taking care of our mental health. We should be very intentional. Just like we have dental health, we take care of our teeth. And we take care of our teeth for a number of reasons. One, they'll fall out, they'll rot, and they'll hurt, or we'll have bad breath, right? And mental health is like that. If you don't take care of it, you'll be offensive to other people, right? Like, you'll lose it, right? It'll hurt you in different areas of your life. And so I'm on a crusade really to tell people and to share with people that you have to take care of your mental health and you have to be intentional. And it's really easy to tell when people are not taking care of their mental health. You know, we're very good in our community about hiding it and acting as if it doesn't, we don't have illnesses and disturbances. But, you know, it starts to show. And if nothing else, COVID showed us that, you know, my number, my phone was ringing off the hook in the midst of COVID because people really couldn't shop it away. They couldn't hang out and party it away, right? Like, people had to really start dealing with themselves. And so I encourage everybody to deal with yourself. Now, mental illness is different. Because everybody has mental health, whether it's good or whether it's bad. But mental illness, we usually look at when people have a diagnosis, when there is a symptom or a collection of symptoms that is disrupting your life. Like, it is hard to work a job while you're depressed. It is nearly impossible to work a job and to take care of a family while you're hearing voices and are paranoid. Right. And even if you can do it, because some people manage, they don't do it, you know, they don't do it that well because there's some disturbances. So when we talk about a diagnosis or disruptions or disorders, we're really looking at that these symptoms have gotten to a point where other people can see them. It's a disruption in your life and how you feel about yourself, your contributions, and how you show up in the world.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for that clarification, because again, we have an optometrist for our eye health. We have what, ear, nose, and throat doctor for that. We have an oral surgeon, or we have a dentist, orthodontics for our teeth. We have, you know, our feet doctor. We have podiatrists for our feet doctor. There's even hand doctors, there's brain doctors. So we have every aspect of specialists for our bodies that focus on that for the health and well-being of it. And our brain is an organ as well. And it requires the maintenance, it requires the attention that all the other things that we take care of as well. So I love that you bring that up. And the mental illness. Can I jump in?
I want to say it actually requires more, right? It requires more, because if I have like a, let's say my foot is hurting, right? And I want to go to the doctor. It doesn't necessarily impact my family, right? Like, it's me hurting. And like, long as I can still do what I'm doing, if I could cook dinner or, you know, things like that, my family is like, yeah, get that taken care of when you get a chance. But if I have a mental illness, right? Like, my employer is like, I'm gonna need you to get that in check. My coworkers are like, something ain't right. And my family is like, yeah, you kind of special. So get that in check. And so we have to really be able to do it. But the stigma really is because that is the only disorder that has us acting out behaviorally, right? Like, so so while it is a medical condition, mental illness is a medical condition, people don't have behaviors associated with their medical condition, right? Like, so you don't have, if you have to see an OBGYN, there's no behaviors necessarily. And so the behaviors are what make people uncomfortable, and just in general, how we've talked about it. The other thing I'll say, at least for Black folks, we've already been told we are broken in so many ways. We don't want to be broken. Like, people don't want to be broken. And so, and that's what people look at mental illness as. It's like, something's wrong. Like, I tell my clients all the time when they like, something's wrong with me. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with you. Let's just talk about the symptoms that you don't like, that you, that's getting in your way, so we can remove them. I don't even necessarily force a diagnosis on my clients, because it makes people uncomfortable. Well, let's just talk. So you might have anxiety, but we don't have to call it that. Let's just talk about why you're not sleeping at night. Let's talk about why you can't stop and pull it together because you got all these racing thoughts, right? Or you're paranoid, or you're afraid of something that doesn't appear real. We don't have to call it a thing if that makes you uncomfortable. And I found that works really well for my clients.
That's awesome. That's awesome. However way we need to receive it, I say, people, words matter. Sometimes it's semantics, but you do whatever works. Mm-hmm. So why is it important for us to really pay attention to mental health, especially right now? Yeah, we're back out in the world. We're not isolated like we were. But a lot of people, like you said, they were forced to deal with themselves. They were forced to deal with family because they were locked in. But now people are getting out. They're going back out to the clubs. They're going back out and doing social things or whatever, and they're trying to hide it. But why is it so important that we now really go back and face it and deal with the mental health and mental wellness?
I think if we don't deal with our mental health, it'll deal with us, right? And I personally don't like to not be in control of at least myself.
Right.
In 2017, my daughter was killed by gun violence. And before that happened, I was living my best life. I had celebrated 25 years of marriage with my husband. My daughters had just got into a college, my husband's alma mater. And we were in a very good place. Financially, we were doing fine. And all of a sudden, my world is shaking, right? Mm. And if I was not well, I don't know if I would have bounced back from that. So, you know, working on wellness helps you do just like prevention. When you think about prevention, why do people work out? Because they don't want to be sick, right? Mm. Why do people eat right, work out, eat right, do things? Why do you brush your teeth? Because you don't want to have cavities. You don't want to have a high dental bill. You don't want your teeth falling out. And so the prevention for mental health has got to be similar. Like, there's some not so good things that can occur when we don't take care of our health. Mm-hmm. Really not so good things. And so we want to be able to be stronger and better, you know, and really, really like be more intentional with it. You know, a lot of time I do an exercise with the people I work with about what they do to take care of themselves. And a lot of stuff is nice, you know, like, oh, I get a massage. I run 3 miles a day. You know, I shop. I do this. I pray. Mm-hmm. Well, baby, when it hits the fan, you need some real stuff on how to take care of yourself. Like, right. It was really just the deal. Like, I mean, I believed in retail therapy for years, but when my daughter got killed, there was nothing in my closet that could help me. Nothing. Mm-hmm. And it was nothing that Saks Fifth Avenue or Nordstrom's or Macy's or even a thrift store. They ain't have nothing that could have resolved that for me. So I had to come to a reality that retail shopping ain't really helping me. You know what I'm saying? So I need to look at that.
Wow. So, and that leads me to the next thing we were talking about, how mental health can affect our money. There's several ways that it can affect our money. You mentioned one way is that if you're not performing at your job or you can't work, that kills the revenue coming into the household. Mm-hmm. So that affects money there.
But God forbid if you're an entrepreneur.
Oh, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. If you're an full-time entrepreneur, you know, or if you're a dualpreneur and you're getting your side business, but you can't perform in your full-time business, and that's going to cause more angst, you know, with that as well. So the other thing is making decisions. It's very hard to make lucid decisions in a manic state. And it's not even a manic state, but in a depressed state, if you're depressed, you know, and I've dealt with this depression for many, many years. And so, you know, when I'm in a depressed state, I hold off on making major decisions.
Yeah.
I cannot make permanent or final decisions in a temporarily depressed state.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are making those decisions. That's why they're doing the retail therapy.
Yeah.
And then they're realizing it doesn't work.
And actually any emotion, like I'm a very rational person, right? And so that works for some people. Some people not too much. But I just feel like emotional decisions, even when the emotions are good, right? Like, oh, this guy makes me feel good. I'm going to marry him. Well, maybe I should like wait a little while. We'll see. Hey, you know, it's the truth.
Yeah.
You know how we do. Like even, oh, this feels so good. I must purchase this right now. Well, it's an emotional decision. And we make a lot of mistakes. And Lord knows I've made my share. So I'm not, you know, I'm a work in progress, even though I am a therapist. I am a work in progress, too. And I've had to learn some real hard money lessons as a therapist because I was making the same mistakes I see my clients making. So I need to take the emotions out of my decision making. Right. I can consider that this makes me feel good, but I can't just make a major purchase based on it makes me feel good because the salesperson is supposed to make it make feel good for me. Right.
Right.
Exactly. So they're doing their job. I can't be mad with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mentioned that in my book, Financial Fornication, that, you know, when we feel the least, we spend the most. Yeah. Because that makes us, you know, for some of us, that especially a spender, you know, in my book Four Financial Languages, just dropped two books on y'all. Okay. You know, the spender, if you're a spender, you know, that retail therapy is real for you. You know, any transaction is going to make that serotonin go up, which is going to help us feel better and which numbs the pain, you know? And so if I don't want to feel the pain, I'm just going to keep doing what's going to make me feel better, but it's not always healthy because that buyer's remorse is no joke too.
That's true. Been there, done that. Yeah.
So what are some of the lessons that you learn as far as like financial lessons that you learn dealing with your mental health?
So again, don't make emotional decisions, period. Not just with money, but especially with money, but period. And even like an even an emotional decision is like my the people on my job getting on my nerves. I just want to leave and I'm out of here. No, not so much, right? Like have an exit strategy. Retail therapy. I subscribe to retail therapy. I literally have four closets in my house. I'm embarrassed to say that. I can't even wear all of the clothes that I have, right? Like, it's just no way. Like, I can't even do it. However, I love shopping. And so I started really looking as I've gotten older, like, do I need this much stuff? Like, this is just a lot of stuff. And I don't really need it. Like, what am I really doing here? Right? Like, with all of these things, and what other things could I have done with my money? Right? Like, do I really need a $3,000 purse? Do I need $1,000 shoes? Like, and what I'm doing though, because listen, because this is about your mental health, because what people don't consider is low self-esteem, imposter syndrome are all causes to depression, right? So it's not just I'm spending the money that I probably really don't have, but it's also why do I need a $3,000 purse? Because the $5 purse carries the same stuff. And it don't make it lighter. It's not like the $3,000 purse is a heavier, like lighter on my back.
Right.
But I'm trying to impress people. And why am I trying to impress people with things versus who I am? And I look at sometimes, and I've seen this in people, everything is designer. Like, sis, what's going on with you? Right. That hasn't always been me. Like, I'm going to be honest about what's me. The retail therapy was me. Even having bags to impress people was me. But like, when you look at a person and everything they have is designer, not that you can't have nice stuff. And I'm not even talking just designer, but like the labels on the outside of the clothes. Right. Like I got on this cot, this, you know, it's a decent cotton shirt, right? No big deal. But I've seen people not wear this kind of shirt because you can't tell that it's a Gucci shirt, right? Like, what is that really about? And so, yeah, like everything is monogrammed so that people will know, or people will look at you in a certain kind of way versus you being enough. Like, I'm just enough. I'm enough no matter what I have on.
Exactly. I love that. I love that. When you're enough, you don't need all the bling bling and flashy stuff, the flashy light syndrome. That's great. One thing I do have a cure for people that have retail therapy and they love retail therapy. If you find that you're going to have, if you have a lot of stuff, you have four closets of stuff, I would, you know, the stuff that you know you're not going to wear, you can sell it. They have different apps now. You can do it on apps, Poshmark, whatever. You can actually sell those, get some money so that you can use that money to go buy some more stuff. So at least you're not using it, using your regular money, right? So I mean, I have friends that have closets of clothes with tags still on them.
It's me.
That they're not going to wear anymore. So I keep telling them, why are you keeping it? Don't give it away. They have apps now. You can do Poshmark. I love that. I love that app. And you can sell those items. You can get the cash and that gives you some more retail therapy money. I mean, if you're going to do it. But then I recommend that you go talk to someone to see why you need retail therapy. Right?
Yeah, that's true. It's very true. I think another thing too is that it's important for us to teach our children the lessons we learn about money. I was on a webinar yesterday for my sorority and it was about money. And I was really ashamed. I was glad I was in the room by myself because they talked about like how we misuse money and like we not collecting assets and you know, we just doing things like we got things. And even that with all of the clothes and the shoes, after a while, they're going to be out of style or moth eaten. Like, but have I purchased property and have I done things that will leave a legacy for my children and my children's children? Because God knows I've made enough money to do that. Right. And I think sometimes you got to be humble and be real. Like, no, I haven't done everything I needed to do. Right. But with and to be able to be transparent enough with myself to say I need to stop and the buck stops here. And instead of every time I think I want to go buy something, whatever I think I would have spent, maybe I should put that money up until I have enough to do something. You know, the other thing about money is we don't talk about the realistic stuff with families. This is more of a family issue. We don't talk about what happened. Like, do you have insurance?
Right.
Because it's emotional. We don't want to talk to a person about them dying because they're going to think I want their stuff and they're going
to think. Or that I want them to die. Like, no, that's not the case.
Exactly.
I'm not trying to rush you out of here, but I want to make it so that we don't have to worry about that. And you don't have to worry about that.
While you're trying to grieve and plan, right? Like, GoFundMe is not an insurance.
It's not insurance. It is not. It is not.
Right. And when you're trying, when you position yourself to do that, you put yourself in even more of a bad state. When my daughter was killed, thank God we had an insurance policy, because I could not have imagined going through that grief and really hoping that people would give me enough money to bury her, or having to prolong the services because we got to wait on getting this money. Like, I needed some closure, right? Like, I couldn't just do 2 to 3 weeks anticipating the worst day of my life. Right. Like, that's real. Right. Like, 2 or 3 weeks I needed to, like, at least close it within a week so that I could just, like, regroup. But, like, long until we have now the funeral is the worst for me. It was the worst day of my life. But it's like, I got to get through it. Right. But if I prolong it and have to deal with this for 3 weeks, oh, my God, like, I just couldn't imagine it. Mm-hmm. And I see families doing that, and I'm just like, that's got to be hard. Mm-hmm. But we got to be able to have these hard conversations, and they might be emotional. They might be emotional conversations, but we got to be able to have them.
You're absolutely right. And hopefully people that are listening will hear that from you as they heard it from other people as well. So what's some advice that you have for people regarding mental health and money?
Well, no matter how much money you have, get your mental health taken care of. One other thing that I see, some people have insurance and they may have a copay, and some people don't have insurance at all, but they may make pretty decent money and they don't want to pay for a treatment, right? They're like, how much is it? Oh my God. I'm like, baby, it's your mind, right? Like, and you definitely can't have that conversation with me and you got on red bottoms.
And there is that.
Right? Like, how much you charge? I got to pay that every week. I'm like, yeah, like, this is your mind. Like, be willing to invest in you. Others, because one thing about it is, like, the investment in my mind, I get a good return on that, right? Like, the investment, the time I take in the morning to meditate and to pray and to talk to my own therapist and to do the things I need to do, the return of investment is amazing. I tell people all the time, my master's degree in psychology, I'm still paying student loans, but I'm here to tell you that's the best investment I ever had. Best investment in my own mind, because I see where, like, it could go another way, right? And I'm able to really be able to handle it. So pay for treatment if you have to. If you got insurance, great, but don't not get it, right? Don't let money be an issue where you don't get it. They have free counseling. They have pastoral counseling that sometimes is connected to maybe a place you worship, and they charge very little. You know, if you have Medicaid, you can get counseling. Like, get your mind right. Like, prioritize that.
That's been said all. Get your mind right. And it's not just get your mind right for a situation. It's get your mind right for life. You know, come on now.
Life happens, and you don't get to, I tell people all the time, you don't get to choose door number one, my kid gets killed. Door number two, I get cancer. Door number three, my house burns down. Like, you don't get to choose, right? But you need to be ready for whatever happens. And financially, you can position yourself to have an emergency fund, you know, to be able to, like, not have to go on the GoFundMe or, you know, depend on the kindness of strangers. Because especially if it's like a natural disaster or a catastrophe, we all might be hurt. And so I might not be able to go into your GoFundMe.
The pandemic, you think about the earthquake that killed, 40,000 people? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And then even to, you know, just recently, you know, people have a mindset that, you know, they could go stay with people and don't pay their way. Like if you stay with somebody, all their bills go up. They got more water being used, more heat, like everything. And so, you know, people just, they don't pay their way. And I think that's another kind of mindset. Like I'm all about helping family, but you should also be willing to help yourself, right? Yeah. Or not just trying to get over on people. Like we look at other cultures who live together peacefully, it looks like. I'm not in their home, so I don't know, but it looks peaceful, right? Peaceful. They help each other establish and start businesses. And then it's somebody else's turn. And we don't do that. Like, you know, I haven't had this problem. I will say I have a couple of books and my friends and family refer business to me all the time, and my church family. However, that's not every entrepreneur's story. And right. People say, oh, my family wouldn't even support me. This person won't support me. And that is unfortunate, but sometimes we are in places where we're not going to get the support we think we're going to get from people. And right. You still got to be able to move forward and not take it personal. Just move, keep it moving.
And talk about it. You know, that talking therapy is very, very important. Just like physical therapy, you know what I mean? So if you get hurt physically, you know, you need to do some physical therapy. If you're hurt and dealing with trauma, you need that talk therapy sometime to talk with the therapist to help to clear out the mental stages on there. Because a lot of time we're holding a whole bunch of stuff in, and that's what causes our mental illness. Yeah. Sometimes we got to let it out and understand our coping skills and how to cope with different things. So that's amazing.
That's another thing. People don't have like the skills. People think like, you know, people stuff it or they don't talk about it or they ignore it, but you're not learning how to cope. You're not learning how to manage your emotions or really deal with stuff. And like you said, let it out. Like I'm a big proponent of crying. Like I cry all the time. Like it's
I just told somebody that the other day. I am really? Not. I hate crying. But I mean, it's necessary.
I don't want people to see me cry because this right. is an ugly cry. But crying here in my house by myself, yes, it is so freeing. And while, you know, I've cried myself a lot and, you know, may have had a headache or definitely wouldn't want nobody to take a picture of me. But like that after it, like getting it all out. Another thing people can do is journal. Like we got to learn how to get this stuff out, but we keep it inside. And then what else it affects? It affects our health.
Our health, our physical health.
Mm-hmm. My doctor told me one time, like he was trying to get me to, he's a naturopath. He was trying to get me to do some expensive vitamins and supplements. I was like, I can't afford it. He said, you can't afford not to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing. You might not be able to afford therapy, but you might not be able not to afford it. Like, you know, it's going to show up some way. So get it done now.
You're going to pay now or you're going to pay later. Pick mm-hmm. one.
And it costs mm-hmm. more later.
It sure does. It costs more to fix things than uh-huh. it does to maintain it.
Right. More at the door. That's what they said when we was back in the day. You know, girl, more at the door. So
you know. So if people want to get in contact with you to learn more, to work with you, how can they reach you?
You could call me at 301-452-4234. You can reach me on my website, www.clinicalforensicassociates.com. Or TyreseMcAllister.org. Either way, you can reach me there. I'm also on Facebook under Tyrese McAllister and Clinical Forensic Associates. And I'm also on Instagram and LinkedIn.
Awesome. So she's everywhere. Websites, social media. She gave you their phone number. No excuse. Make sure you reach out to Tyrese. Tyrese, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and for being, you know, in the mental health movement. I really love you and appreciate you for that.
Same here, sis. Take care.
Oh, yeah. You got a podcast. You got to tell people about your podcast, yes. Right? Come on. That's how we met.
Yes, yes, yes. So podcast is ThursdayTherapy.com. Right now, we're just streaming from Facebook every Thursday at 7 p.m. We talk about everything. And the reason why we even created the podcast is because we realize people in our community don't really want to talk about mental illness or mental mm-hmm. health. It's a taboo subject. So we try to bring light and love to it. Like myself and my co-elevator, because we are elevating each other. We do this podcast. We try to keep it light and fun, but you are going to learn. You are going to learn different things. We talk about everything from anxiety and all the disorders and what they are, how it shows up, and possible treatments. And we talk about even weed, right? Like, because weed does have medicinal factors if you don't have psychosis. So we even had the weed guy in on our show. So we talk about literally everything. We honor the days that are being observed. Like we even honored last week, Potato Chip Day, which is the 14th of March. But we talk about literally everything. It's a very good and lighthearted show, but you will learn some good stuff.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Oh, no problem. Thank you for having that podcast. And everybody tune in Thursdays on Facebook. Make sure you find it. And what is it called again?
Thursday Therapy Pod.
Thursday Therapy Pod. Make sure you look for it. Shoot, Google it if you have to, but make sure you get on their podcast. Thank you everyone for watching, listening, liking and sharing, and most importantly, subscribing to Financial Fornicating with Madam Money and Friends. I love you. And there's nothing you can do about it.